This is Phil Rowe.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
We're going to be looking down now, staring downwards. Podiatry or podiatric medicine is a branch of medicine devoted to the study, diagnosis and medical and surgical treatment of disorders of the foot, the ankle and the lower extremity. Extremity. That's better. I'm going to ask my next guest how far, in fact, we go up the knee or beyond, actually, because we think of a chiropodist as well. And that's the older term, but the term podiatry came into use in the early 20th century. It started as a terminology in the United States, is now used worldwide, including countries such as the United Kingdom and Australia. So you probably would have thought of your chiropodist looking after your feet before, but now they tend to get called podiatrists, but they answer to both, I think, when you call their name. Hey, chiropodist. Hey, podiatrist. And hey, hello to Lisa Johnson. Good morning to you.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me in today.
Thanks for joining us. You are local, which is nice. We did a little bit of a track down on Union. We learned that you went to Hills Road Sixth Form College all those years ago.
I did.
But you've had a glittering career in feet, Lisa.
I have, yes.
All these years. So the first question then is how far up the limbs do you go? Obviously the ankles, I'd imagine, but do you work on people's knees as well?
Yeah, we certainly do. I mean, when you look at the body as a whole, it's a little bit like that song, you know, the knee bone's connected to this bone and so on and so forth. So quite often we find ourselves actually going all the way up to sort of the top of the head, believe it or not. When we look at the way people walk, head positioning can give us an idea about what's going on lower down with your feet. And also you'd be surprised, things like back pain, knee pain, hip pain can also be related to foot problems. So the whole body we technically do look at.
Our nervous system is amazing, Lisa, because it could be a problem in our foot that's actually causing a twinge or something, a pain, because of the way the nerves are arranged, I guess. I mean, put me right, because I'm only a lay person here. But you think, oh, this must be my hip, but it actually comes all the way up, maybe one leg, from right down at the base.
Yeah, you can have something called referred pain, basically, which is basically where the issue, say, for instance, is your lower back, if that nerve is being compressed, for instance, like in sciatica, you feel it lower down in your bum, don't you? It could be, for instance, the femoral nerve that's being irritated from higher up, and then you then feel it lower down in your leg.
Because our feet are our furthest extremity, I don't think people look after their feet as well as they should. They probably don't pay so much attention.
No.
Look down at their toenails, a big nail, maybe. But there are so many, I mean, we'll get on, hopefully I'm not going to put anybody off their mid-morning break. We'll talk about ingrowing toenails and verrucas and athlete's foot. What was the other one? Oh, yes, I wasn't up on my arches, so I was flat-footed at one time. Let's start there then, flat-footedness.
Okay.
Now, I don't know why this was, but when I was about 11 or 12, the school nurse came back around. It was fairly local as well. I went to school at what was later Netherhall. At the time, it was in those days, it was a grammar school, by the by. But I remember them saying to me, Roe, you're flat-footed. And I thought, well, what the heck was this? And then they explained that I wasn't walking on the arches of my feet, which the arch, presumably, I'm using my hands to illustrate to Lisa here, is on the outside of my foot, isn't it? So the inside should have a little concave effect on the sole of my foot. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. The foot itself, in terms of the bone structure, is a little bit like an arch, or like a bridge, basically. And your navicular, which is the one that's on the inside, in the centre, is like your keystone. So when people say, oh, you're flat-footed or you've got high arches, they look at basically that curvature of the foot and then say you're either A or B. It's interesting, actually, the way that podiatry sort of changed is that we look at the foot in so many other ways. So believe it or not, you've actually got three arches in your feet, not just one. But everyone just tends to look at the what we call the medial longitudinal arch, which is the one I was just talking about, that sort of keystone bridge thing. But yeah, it's other things like your subtalar joint axis. There's so many other positionings, whether or not your muscles are working, if you've got any strength problems or weakness problems, how much range of motion your joints have got. So the foot is a very complicated part of the body. So don't get upset if you are classified as flat-footed or if you've got a high arch, because there's a lot more pieces to the puzzle than just that.
All right, so Can a high arch, that's the opposite from being flat-footed, can that be a problem for people?
It can do, but it's usually other things such as if you've got very high arches, you tend to have tighter muscles and tendons, and that's where you start to see problems. Because if you imagine you're trying to do your daily activities, and if you've got that tightness that's there, that just adds an extra layer of difficulty for the muscles to have to work against. So yeah, it can lead to problems, but then again, some people go through their life with no issues. So
an army medical, or if you were joining one of the armed forces, if you were flat-footed, years ago it used to be said, no, whether this is true, if you're flat-footed, you would never make the ranks of the army.
That's very true. And they do say that's actually the reason why flat-footedness is more prevalent nowadays, because in World War II, if you had flat feet, you wouldn't basically pass the medical examination. And obviously, many men died during World War II, and they pretty much all had either a neutral or high arches.
That's a fascinating fact. Well, look what we've just discovered.
Yeah, a bit of history.
But just for me, by the way, I did overcome the flat-footedness very, very quickly. And I remember they gave me a sock. So I had to take my sock off and then grip the sock with my...
Oh, yeah.
My toes.
So that would have been for your extensor tendons, basically, to strengthen those, yeah.
And we got there. So I'm fine. I'm not flat-footed.
Happy days.
For the audience. The other thing, though, I'm going through Rose ailments here at school. Of course, it was the changing room. It was sport, and everybody's barefooted on the floor and in the changing room and the showers and whatever. And, of course, the common things for children and adults, of course, but particularly because you're going to spread something like athlete's foot or verrucas on the soles again of your feet. For me, verrucas were never a problem, and I wonder whether it's kind of genetic, whether we have more of a predilection to get a verruca. You can tell me, but athlete's foot for me was a little bit sore. It was always between my little toe and the next one in from there, and it was right in that bit there. It was. I remember in those days there was a sort of a talcum powder you could have. I don't know what the modern treatment is, but I guess it was an anti... sorry for people putting you off your lunch. An antifungicide seemed to get rid of the problem. It was really quite sore and dry in there. I guess treatments today for that have rather changed.
I mean, actually, it's pretty much what you've just described. It's pretty straightforward treating athlete's foot. The key that a lot of people tend to miss out is that you want to treat it aggressively and for a short period of time. So terbinafine is a really good antifungal agent. It's broad spectrum as well, so it basically helps kill a lot of different types of fungus. So you just basically want to use that every day for 7 days, and make sure you put the Dactrin spray or the powder, which is what you were referring to, in your shoes and socks every morning for about 2 weeks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I had to get my school socks. Is that right? They had to be grey because that was regulation. And you get this talcum powder, and you tip it in your
socks. Yeah, stick it in there.
Before, as you got dressed in the morning. Ah, happy days. Well, not really, I suppose. Would that be non-prescriptive if somebody...
Yeah, it's what we call over-the-counter stuff. So you can go to your pharmacist. They'd be able to give it to you. Or if you aren't quite sure as well, your pharmacist is a good point of call, as well as obviously your podiatrist for advice and dispensing, those sorts of things.
Your pharmacist is always a good place if it takes the burden off your GP.
Definitely. I think people forget as well. Pharmacists are pretty clued up when it comes to stuff like that. So, don't feel afraid to go into Boots and show them your foot.
Like there's a chemist in Great Shelford, and they have, even in somewhere like that, little consultation room where you can go and you can be private and talk about your feet or other things. The other one was verrucas. Now, look at all the ailments we're coming up with this morning, Lisa. We'll talk about bones and joints in a little while. But with the verruca, it was, I never had one, and I know somebody, and they show me your, no, they didn't want to see the, I saw their verruca. You heard it here first. And what it's just a little, it almost looked like somebody just got the end of one of these Sharpie-type pens and put a little black point on someone's skin. I think it was very painful for them. So there's very little you can see of a verruca, isn't there, on the surface of your skin?
Well, the thing is, you've got to remember with verrucas is that they are, it's a viral skin infection. So the actual verruca itself, you can't see it. I mean, you'd be pretty, it'd be pretty impressive if you could.
I see a little black dot.
Yeah, so those black dots that you can see are actually your capillary endings. And the changes to the skin are changes that the virus has basically caused to make the environment more hospitable for itself. So, for instance, it will draw your capillaries closer to the surface or more superficial in order to ensure that the skin cells it inhabits are healthy and thrive and basically nice little houses for itself.
And they go, somebody said they go very deep into the flesh of the underside.
I mean, they can do. It just depends on how deep the infection is, basically. So, yeah, there's different types of verrucas as well. Depending on the location of what they're like, it will depict what they look like as well. Some will be more raised, some will be deeper, some will be tiny. So you'll get clusters as well of lots of little ones, or
so you
just
have more
one big one.
One at once. That's
yeah, cool. You can do. Yeah.
And it's a gel that you can use to get rid of
them? Well, nowadays what we try and do is we create trauma to the skin, whether that be through microwave therapy or cryotherapy, in order to kickstart that immune system. So the way that you get the immune system's response is always through by creating inflammation. So it's not the nicest thing to endure, but it certainly, in terms of success rates, is a lot higher on the spectrum as opposed to things like salicylic acid.
Yeah, so you're trying to get an action to get a reaction from the body. So you have to kickstart the body into
pretty much
throwing this verruca off.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Does it take a long time for something like that to disappear? And, of course, the risk of them coming back.
Well, it just depends on your immune system. If you're immunosuppressed, unfortunately, the chances of getting rid of it are quite slim. So say, for instance, if you had rheumatoid arthritis, we're taking things like methotrexate, which dulls down your immune system pretty much. Or, for instance, if you had diabetes, which does make you slightly immunosuppressed as well, then it's harder to get rid of. Whereas if you were a fit and healthy person, then the prospects of getting rid of it would be higher.
All these ailments I'm bringing to you this morning, Lisa. Now, the next one then, ingrowing toenails.
Yes.
I know somebody's got one of those, extremely painful for them. I think it was his big toe. Can it affect the other toes on your feet?
It can, yep. I've done nail surgery in pretty much all of the toes. Not all at once, but yeah, pretty much all of them. But it's quite an easy thing to get rid of, I would say. We can either treat it surgically or non-surgically, because as podiatrists, we have our local anaesthetic certificate. So we can do procedures under local anaesthetic if needed. But yeah, no, it's pretty straightforward to treat. And we can give advice as well in terms of preventing it from coming back.
You must have some pretty mighty sort of electrical engineers, cutters, to do your toenail work on something like an ingrowing toenail too.
Yeah.
Because presumably what's happened is the toenail has wrapped itself around. It's not as flat as it should be, and therefore it's cutting into the skin.
Yeah, so there's usually two reasons. If you're really unfortunate, you'll have both of them at the same time. But it's basically if the nail is very curved, the medical term for that is involuted, or that basically the nail plate is too wide, so there's not enough space for both the skin and the nail, and then they start sort of causing havoc with each other. The issue with them is that they don't tend to get better by themselves, because with the inflammation that's brought down into there, that just causes more swelling, and then you get into this cycle of the two irritating each other even more, basically.
We're not hopefully being too graphic this morning for everyone. Well, we're putting little warnings out there, but the final one on nails anyway, toenails. Some people say, well, you know, my toenails, my hands are beautifully manicured or enough, and my fingernails and my thumb are nicely nourished. But when I look at my feet, my poor feet, the nails look so dried out sometimes. Not me personally, but I don't look at the health pages in the back of these magazines, but you often will see something like that. Is there something that people can use to apply to their nails on their feet then, Lisa, to actually just nourish them?
Yeah.
Like an oil?
Vitamin E oil is really good. Vitamin E is quite important in terms of like protein synthesis and things like that. Your nails are mainly made out of protein. So, vitamin E oil is always a good one, I would say. And also, I'd say if you have like gel nail varnish or nail varnish generally, just make sure perhaps in the winter months you just go for a block, like about a couple of weeks, just to have nothing on there, just to let the nails recover and breathe.
So what got you into feet?
Everyone asks me this. At first I was actually looking to do a degree in physiotherapy. I went and visited all of the universities, had a look around the premises. Podiatry actually comes under the same sort of brackets. It's the department of, or the school of health. And I looked in the podiatry sort of lecture rooms and looked at the course and thought, do you know what, actually I fancy doing that instead. So yeah, I've always had a fascination with sort of science. I quite like sport. put the two together as well as helping people, then yeah, podiatry is a good fit for that, really.
How many podiatrists in the country? Do you know? Any idea?
Oh, my God.
Is it sort of... I can imagine that there's probably vacancies for podiatrists. I don't know.
Do you know what? It's similar to nursing and the fact that, unfortunately, we have a massive shortage of clinicians. And certainly with, for instance, like the NHS, you can see that with plenty of diabetic patients who perhaps were being seen by the NHS and no longer being able to be seen because of a lack of funding and also clinicians. So, yeah, anyone who wants to be a podiatrist, go for it. There's lots of good prospects.
You have to work hard for it, though. Yeah. I notice, you know, your track record, Lisa. I mean, from leaving Hills Road and what you've done, and you've got a master's in science, isn't it? That you've took you through your medical education. I mean, you can't just turn up and start clipping someone's toenails. It's a lot of study over a lot of years.
But it's great fun, you know, and really rewarding. I mean, just being able to have someone hobbling into your clinic and then walking out, you know, skipping almost down the road sounds a bit dramatic, but, you know, sometimes the change is that that large, really, within that hour's appointment. So, yeah, it is really fulfilling, I would say.
And you have an amazing timetable over the week because you work for some of the, in the private sector, you have your own company. You also help out at with the NHS services to Addenbrookes. Oh, do you go there now?
I don't know, but I have previously gone over into Addenbrookes and provided some care there. But I tend to see people more now in Brookfields, I would say, just because it's easier to access in the private sector. Yeah.
And there's more geriatric care maybe there.
Yeah, true. The staff there are really friendly as well. Whereas at Addenbrookes, I always feel when I go there, they're so busy, you know. So it's nice to go somewhere that's a little bit quieter and you can get a bit more time with the patients, I would say.
And some of your patients just say, well, look, come to my home. I don't want to be messed around with in a doctor's surgery. You also do home visits for some
people. I do, yeah. Yes. Well, not everyone can make it into clinics, so...
Maybe not mobile.
No, exactly. Or even, for instance, they can't drive anymore, disabilities, or even children, for instance, if their parents can't take them into clinic within our opening hours, sometimes it's easier for me to go around there when they've come home from school. So, yeah, lots of different patients of different ages.
And you'll have a very warm, friendly smile from a podiatrist who's sitting opposite me at the moment. He's really, very engaging, fascinating. We could probably talk all my... You'd think, what can I talk about feet? But look what we've done
in the last
nearly 20 minutes. But Lisa, we have to leave it there, unfortunately.
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
You put your feet up on the desk now.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. That's Lisa Johnson there, who's a podiatrist based here in Cambridge. Thank you very much.
Thank you.